Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice and welcome to Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. And why are we fat? Well, we're talking about filling your expat life up to the brim so that it's overflowing with all the good stuff, living a fat life. Today we're talking about the insecurity of expat life and how secure is your expat job. Bizarrely, 2 days after recording this podcast, which began with the theme of Nikki's husband finding out that his company was merging with another, my very own husband rang to tell me that the same thing was happening with his. We both now have merge dates of January 1, 2018. 2017 is going to be a very interesting year. So many of you had similar stories, whether it was a merger, a redundancy, or in some cases, 30 days notice to get out of the country. It became very clear that none of us really know when our expat days may be up. Today, we're going to give you some tips on how to become more prepared. We're going to speak to some expats who have survived the tale of redundancy and mergers. We've also got some fantastic television, podcast, and book suggestions. So let's just get on with it, shall we? Let's go and say hi to the fabulous serial expat, Nikki Moffat, who's in Hamburg, Germany. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? And well, how's the cricket?
So, yes, it's all very different, I have to say. Like usually when I sit with you and do the podcast, I'm hiding up in my bedroom in Qatar with, you know, the dust and dirt and sand all around me, watching, you know, pigeons drop dead from the heat in the sky. But today I come to you from my lounge room at the beach. I have the cricket on the television. New Zealand are 9 for 147. So we're looking imminent for an Aussie win, which will be the third one in the series. Oh, he's out. He's out. Just caught. Steve Smith just caught. Bolt. So, yes, it's all over. Australia just won the series. How's that for excitement? If only we were in real time going live.
We are in real time for ourselves, though. The excitement is here. I did a little jump on my seat.
Yay. And the other thing I have is a glass of wine, which I never have because it's the evening. It's 8:40 on a Friday night. And I figured I'm allowed.
How good on your Friday night date?
I know. You are my Friday night date, as I said to you before, because I have driven into town every day, sometimes twice a day, since I've been back here, and it's a 45-minute drive in and out of town along a freeway to sort of get there, and I'm over it.
The price you pay for living at the beach.
I know. I'm going to shut up now and not complain.
I'm just
done. It's been a really, really busy week. It seems crazy.
It's also been emotional though, right?
Yeah, it has. So what's been happening?
Here in Hamburg. I had my first German exam, which is the A1 exam, and I passed. Yay me.
Yay you.
So now I'm doing A2. I worked out, I think it was my first German exam for 30 years. So 29 years. Anyway, whatever. Long time.
That 1 year is really important.
Well, it is, because then that makes me, and I was like very young when I left school, just so you all know. And then my friend came to stay, which was fantastic. She came for 3 days for a long weekend. Mm-hmm. We had so much fun. We just wandered around. We could be a tourist again. My family is so sick of being tourists and I still love it. So we
did all those things. And so this was a girlfriend from Atlanta. And it was a Christmas markets kind of thing. Is that why she came along?
Yes. Well, I just said I knew she could come sort of for a few days anytime because she gets super, super cheap tickets. And I said, why don't you come for the Christmas markets? And she said, okay. I was like, good. Then I kept her to her promise. So, yeah, she came and we had a fun. Well, we all went together as a family one night, which was a little bit challenging. But there was plenty of glue vines, so it was all good. And then the other days we just went by ourselves. There are so many, like there's 10, 15 Christmas markets. Every time you turn a corner, there's a new market or just like a little stall on the street selling glue vine.
Okay, really first thing, glue vine is wine. Is that right?
Yes, it's right. Like mulled wine, yes. Sorry. But it's not glue in the wine.
And the Christmas market thing, now I have a child who has just spent the weekend in Paris. There's a sentence I didn't think I'd ever say. But I have a child who's just spent the weekend in Paris and she said the Christmas markets were everywhere in Paris. Is this just a European thing? Am I going to find Christmas markets in most European cities right now?
I think so, and probably even in Qatar, you know, one day. Since you've got your own Oktoberfest, I'm sure you'll have your own Christmas market. Anywhere where I think there are European communities, I saw this year in Atlanta, I saw someone had replied that they were going to a Christmas market downtown. So I think it's kind of a thing that's spreading, but certainly all through Europe. There was an article on the top 15 Christmas markets in Europe. And they do it by city. And I think Hamburg came in at number 3. So I'm pretty happy with our array of markets. They're everywhere. But in Germany, I don't know what they are in other countries, but here there's a lot of eating and drinking, a lot. And you can sort of take you, as I've said before, there's a lot of drinking on the streets. So you pay everything's, there's no disposable anything. So you either have a mug or a glass and you carry it with you and then you take it back to get refilled or you turn it in and you get your deposit back that you paid for.
Oh, so it's not really just about the shopping. It is like a Christmas celebration.
I guess that's kind of what it is, yes. You know, people go, they meet for lunch at the Christmas markets and things like that. It's, yeah. I mean, there are shops selling things as well, but it's more about sort of a time of year, I guess.
Ah, now I get it. Because I know that there are groups of, you know, I guess primarily women. I've yet to meet a man that has said to me and the guys are going to the Christmas markets in, you know, Austria this weekend. But I did have a group of friends in Qatar who all went to the Christmas markets in Germany. I can't remember exactly where they went, but I know they went to Germany. And I kind of thought, oh, no, that's not for me because I'm not all about the shopping. But if I knew that it was also about food and drinking, I might have been
there. Not all about the shopping at all. And it's very fun. And so we had a fun weekend and every day we just went to a different Christmas market as long as we did our other stuff as well, which was quite fun.
My last week and a half, Nikki, since we chatted, has been just a tad emotional in the leaving my 3 children behind in one country to then head to another country to wave my other child off to France. Very bizarre. It's really made me think about this whole expat gig and the space that we have between us as our children get older and what we're doing. And I'm sure I'll probably bore everyone to tears and write about it and talk about it more, but it really has got me thinking.
I think people wish you wrote more about it, not less.
Thank you. That's very kind. But it has, I mean, there's a couple of things. One is the guilt that I feel being away from the other 3 every time I come over. But I also, you know, today I had a coffee with a fellow boarding school mum, and Felicity lives out in a remote sort of station in the Northern Territory, and you know this is part of her everyday gig. You know, there is no other way for her to operate with. She has to send her children off to boarding school and there has to be time apart. And I wonder what it is that makes me have this incredible guilt. One, that, you know, my husband's there with the children, so they're fine and they're safe and they're looked after. And I know that he has travelled all over the world leaving me with them, and I don't think he's ever felt guilt for doing that. But what is it with this mother's guilt of being away from your kids?
I have no idea, and I really don't think I have it, so I don't know. I only say that. No, I'm sounding bad. I only say that because when we lived in Hong Kong and my husband and I both travelled for work, I was happy to get home to them, but I never felt really bad that I wasn't there. So yeah. I can't say, but they were smaller and, you know, it's a different situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if that's it too. Do you know, because how it works with us and how we get through it is I talk to them all at breakfast time in the morning. They kind of plonk the iPad on the table and swing me around, like, you know, spin the bottle. It's spin the mum on the table. And, you know, people get busy and it's sort of like, you talk to mum, why I go and get that? No, you talk to mum, I've got to brush my teeth. You talk to mum, I need to pack my bag, sort of thing. And we cope that way. And then at the end of the day, my little guy, who's 10, Skypes me and he literally puts me on the table while he does his homework. But that's, you know, 11:30 at night for me. So I have to be really conscious to be up and
not
ready.
Not go to sleep.
Yeah, not go to sleep. And I don't, because then there would be serious guilt. But so I sit there and you know, it's exactly the same as kind of being there in that he gets distracted, there's the same frustration, I can't do this, do you know, it's bizarre, you know, me, we're actually taking screenshots of long division, you know, so I can look at it, and did his homework with him, went to sleep, the phone rang at 1:30 in the morning, sort of jumped up, hello, and it's my 14-year-old daughter, Mum, I made the team, and she'd made the squad for tennis. And it was like, that's great. But seriously thinking, oh, which team? What is it? That she's like, yep, okay, I've got it. It's tennis. That's right. There were JV trials. Do you know, it's the most bizarre thing. And then to sort of be here where you're in that mad scramble of getting a child ready to go overseas and getting the shopping done and the Christmas presents and all the emotional stuff that went with that, because you can imagine that was highly emotional for both her and I to put her on a plane for 6 weeks to go and live with strangers.
No, I got a question. Did you send Christmas presents with her?
Yes.
For her?
Yes. So,
and do you really think she's not going to open them before Christmas?
No, I do, because I think, knowing the child, if it was another particular child of mine, I would know that they would be open before they'd even landed. But with her, because I think she wanted to have presents under the tree to open with the family, right? Because she's going to be with another family. I guess you know there's no other way of presents getting to you, that's it, that's what you're getting.
You could have sent them directly to the family.
I guess I could have, but I was just too worried they wouldn't get there.
You're a good mum. Well, I would never send it. Well, yeah, no, with one of my children I would and the other I wouldn't. Yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, so I did, she got a couple of things to take with her, so she just got some very small things to open on the day. But also we had to pack presents for her family as well, her French family, which are providing me with hours and hours of entertainment, because she's now been there for two nights and she, of course, sends me texts about what they're eating and what they're doing and how they're living. And it's fascinating. It's as good as I hoped it would be, with stories of what they're eating and how they eat. She said they had 15.
A lot of cheese.
Yes, 15 different types of cheese for dessert. How phenomenal is that? Now, enough about me. I want to talk to you about you, because this is why we're doing today's podcast. Today's podcast is all about the uncertainty of expat employment and expat life. And, Nikki, you've had a weird one pop up in the last week.
Tell me
what's going on.
All right. So imagine this, Kirsty. Just sit yourself down for a moment. You move to a new country. You spend the first 3 months, 3 to 4 months, settling your kids in school, looking for a new city, looking for friends. You build a kitchen. And your husband's getting his head around a new job. And, you know, there's always ongoing media speculation about this particular company that my husband has worked for the last 16 years. So it's always been a great takeover target. Anyway, so you live with the media speculation, but you just go on. And then on the fourth month of your new job, you're called to a company meeting held in the atrium of your newly renovated building that just cost millions of dollars to renovate.
Oh, yes. I remember that. And Sam said they'd move to a brand new building on his first day.
And then the chairman of the board gets up to speak and speaks very seriously in German about something that you don't speak about something. And then you're looking around the room and then people are crying. People are looking down, shuffling their feet. And then a few people standing near you turn around to you and say, oh, you probably don't understand what's going on. But what had happened is that the company has been sold. So the company my husband has worked for, that we've lived in every country and moved with, has been sold to a competitor. So that's what happened this week. So it kind of pulls the rug out a bit from underneath your struggling to stand up, and then the someone repositions the things underneath your feet.
And Nikki, what do you think? I gather you probably don't know what this means for you right now because it's all too early. But what is the speculation of what that means for you and your job?
Yeah, so people talk about the EU being overregulated, but in this case, yay for regulation. So it's a 12-month process for them to get all the approvals through the EU because the company buying it is another European Union company. So it will take 12 months. So in the next 12 months, there is absolutely no change to the business. If you stay with the business, you may get a loyalty bonus. And as of January 1, 2018, the new company then gets hold of all the information about the employees and all that kind of stuff, and then makes its announcements about what will happen. So really, we don't know in the long term what will happen. I mean, my husband has come here to do a job that is a global role, and obviously global roles are already done by the global people doing those roles in Copenhagen. That would be a crossover. But whether there are other things that exist that may suit, we're not really sure. So we've kind of got a little bit of breathing space in terms of we've got the next 12 months to decide, you know, whether we want to stay and see what happens, whether we get any sort of extra information, or whether we just decide to moveon.com.
Yes. Yes. And the company, and I don't know if you want to say, so I won't say.
Oh, yeah, I don't mind. No, it's okay.
Okay, so the company that has purchased the company that Sam works for is a huge, big global international that is well known for its expat staff. So there could also maybe be a chance for opportunity, or is Sam sort of feeling no, it will be that they already have people that do those roles?
Well, I think the benefit of the thing that Sam's done is that he has done many roles in many countries. So he's had exposure to a lot of markets and a lot of different roles in those markets. So this was kind of like a unifying role for him. So I think that there's certainly opportunity. I mean, he's worked for a lot of he works in shipping, and Maersk has bought them. Maersk is the biggest shipping company in the world, and there are a lot of people all over the world. We've met Maersk people wherever we've lived. Because shipping people always seem to live in the same cities. So there might be opportunities, but there might not. And I guess the other thing is to do with, really, let's face it, age. So he's coming to an age now where it's not so easy to change industry. It's not so easy if you're unemployed to find new employment. I think, you know, that's also something to consider. Not that we consider ourselves old, but certainly there is a point where, you know, and it's like a funnel. The further you go up the funnel, you know, the less jobs there are at certain levels, and you kind of have to decide what to do.
So, like we always say, when you put if you put expat in front of any word, and in this case it is takeover or redundancy or, you know, change, but if you put expat in front of any situation, it does make it a whole lot more complicated. And so I had kind of put a note out on the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle page asking people how secure did they feel in their employment. And the answers were really good, weren't they?
They were fantastic.
They really
were. And
very
reassuring.
Yes, yes. Because it just showed that no one does. And even when people, you know, there were a couple of people who said, oh, look, no job's secure now. But there was a lovely a woman called Claire who pointed out, yeah, that might be the case that no job is secure. But she said she'd been made redundant twice, and once was when they were at home and once was when they were expats. And she said that when they were expats, it was 100% harder. For all of these reasons that I think people forget is that when you're an expat, you have a change and there is something in the air with your job security, it suddenly means you're not just thinking about looking for another job. You're looking at new schools, you're looking at new houses, you're looking at relocations, you're looking at, and most of the time it wasn't your idea.
Yes, and that's the thing, you feel less control, I think. I think there's the feeling is of less control.
I thought Claire's answer was so interesting when she was talking about, the fact that they've been made redundant twice. So I actually reached out to her to see if I could have a chat. Do you want to have a listen to Claire now and then I'll come back and talk to you again?
So the first time, so it's my husband that's been made redundant the both times. The first time we were living at home in London in the UK, and the massive difference, I suppose, is we both worked then. So I was working and we were at home, and when he lost his job, so it was 2009 during a financial crisis and, huge redundancies everywhere. It was just, you don't have a time limit on finding another job in the same way. So he found another job. I carried on working, covered the bills. We stayed in our house. There wasn't that much to kind of worry about apart from obviously finding another job and making sure bills were covered. So that was our kind of first experience of it. And it just wasn't, it was hugely stressful, but nothing like the stress of kind of being made redundant when you're overseas. We moved to Abu Dhabi about a year ago. We were in Qatar before for 4 years. And then about a year ago, we moved to Abu Dhabi with a new job for my husband. And about a year in, he was made redundant. And obviously, my sort of expat experience is it tends to take about a year to feel you settle into a new place. So we were finally feeling we're settled, we've made friends, and the kids are happy in school. And then suddenly, you get this massive bombshell that you may have to go home. So what we did was he's on a 3-month notice period. So we had 3 months of kind of being able to stay and money and sponsorship. So we kind of gave ourselves a month and thought, well, let's see where we are in a month. And if there's nothing kind of coming up, then we have to think about going home. But kind of the reality of that is it never quite works that simply, because there's always a few things like, oh, well, maybe there's a job coming or... So it's after about 6 weeks that you start thinking, because the big thing in the Middle East, which probably is not the same for all countries, is you're obviously sponsored to be here, and if you lose your job, then you lose your sponsorship, so you can't really stay. So we kind of thought, well, we'll give it. So after about 6 weeks, there was nothing definite. So we started to get the packers in with quotes and sort of thinking about what do we do about the kids and where do they go to school. We have a place in London, but chances are we probably won't go and live back there. So do we go and live with my parents for a bit and they go to school there while we think about where we're going to move to? And it's just so many decisions that you're having to make so quickly, and none of them are decisions you really want to be making, because you don't feel it's not your choice to be going. So you sort of tend to put off. I mean, I think we sort of put off some of the decisions a bit, like, well, we'll think about schools in a bit, or, that kind of thing. I mean, in the end, we were quite lucky. It was about 8 weeks in, and he did get another job, and so we could kind of ring up the packers and kind of go, no, we don't need you. But so he's based in Abu Dhabi. We stay here, but he's working in Saudi, so he travels kind of 3 or 4 days a week to Saudi.
So maybe not ideal, but enough that makes you not have to disrupt your whole life.
Yeah, that's it. And in the end, we made the decision. It's not the ideal job by any stretch, but we kind of made the decision that if he could do it for a year or so, or 18 months, the age of our children and things, it would get us to a better time to think about if, where we're going to stay. If we're going to stay being expats, do we go home? They would be a slightly better age to move home. And also it would give us 12, 18 months to think about if we do go home, where do we want to live? What schools could we get them into? And it wouldn't, because my thing was I didn't want to move the children back and send them to a school, you know, near my parents' house and then move and then have to send them to another school, you know, in maybe 6 months' time. And they've done sort of three schools in, you know, 12 months. And
yes.
Whereas hopefully this, I don't, it's not a forever job probably for him, but it's kind of bridging a gap at the moment, and by a bit more time, you know, and what you think about kind of the future and where we might end up. The biggest thing I found actually is the more I started to speak to people, the more there's just so many people in the same boat kind of going, yeah, my job's not very secure either, or my husband's had to get a job and now he goes to Kuwait, you know, 5 days a week. And it's amazing how, for me, the biggest thing amongst my friends was just how many other people are experiencing it and are living, you know, out in Abu Dhabi in a fairly insecure kind of way, and they're not quite sure if they're going to be here in 6 months' time or not, which was quite a shock because you sort of think no one really had spoken about it until I started to mention, you know, school gates and things, or not sure if we're staying or kind of what's going on. And then suddenly people open up a lot, which, it surprised me quite a lot how many people are in the same boat.
And what would your advice be?
I mean, I think for us, it probably made us think a lot more about kind of our future as expats, like how long we would want to stay and do we want to be here sort of, our children are still at primary school, but do we want to be here way into the future? And if we don't, you know, what would the plan be? So to start to think a bit more about if you do have to go home, kind of when, where would you go? And start to think about the process of that. I suppose the other thing is, it's just always probably having some money, because if you're going home off your own back, you've got to pay for the packers and the this and the that. So kind of always trying to make sure you keep that kind of safety net and don't take out massive loans that, you know, when you first arrive and you think, I'm going to buy that whizzy fancy car and, you know, everything's going to be brilliant. So we were lucky in that respect because, I mean, at Qatar, I think it's the same, but you can't leave the country very easy without standing loans. So you've got to think about paying all of that off as well. And the other thing I think is just kind of just speak to people about it all and be really honest, because a lot of people have been through it as well and they can be really helpful, and just not sort of stress too much. I think, I mean, it was really stressful, but kind of in the end it will work out. And I mean, we're lucky because we're much luckier than a lot of expats, because if we went home, we would just go back to the UK, and that's quite a safe place for us to go back to.
And did you find that talking about it too actually helped your husband get another job? Did the networking actually help?
Yeah, it helped hugely, and it was something that was really kind of, it was amazing actually, because he kind of was on LinkedIn and Facebook and things like that. And I mean, the number of people that came out, like his old company in Qatar, you know, so many people came out to try and help and see what they could do and offer support. And yeah, which was definitely, yeah, I would say he probably wouldn't have found another job so easy if he'd sort of kept it in and not been so open about kind of what was happening. In Qatar, when we were there, I think there was something like 20,000 jobs went in certain sectors. And it, you know, it's happening everywhere, and it's nothing to do with anyone's kind of competence or ability. It's just the way, yes, it is, and you shouldn't feel ashamed about it. It's just the way it is. And but yeah, I mean, I think definitely being open, and it was incredible how much people did try to help. You know, they didn't need help and didn't really kind of affect them. And even people that couldn't help were sort of, oh, I'll come out for a drink, or, you know, pop round and have a chat. And, you know, which is really, it is really nice. And it makes you realise how much people do all kind of pull together to help out.
Mm-hmm. I thought Claire was, like I said, I thought she was fascinating, and I thought she gave fantastic advice. I loved what she said about being open and upfront about what was going on and getting the feelers out there, and how that can kind of help you get another job as well.
And I think, like everything, when you talk about something and when you feel open to talking about it, other people open up back to you. And like she said, she had no idea that so many people were going through similar things or in a similar situation or had made those changes. And, you know, it's like when you're pregnant and you walk around and then every sudden everyone you see is pregnant. You're like, there were never these many pregnant women before.
It's the red car theory. You buy a red car and suddenly every car's red. You get pregnant and suddenly everyone's pregnant.
And it's the same with this situation. You know, you talk to people and you say, you know, and different people have different feelings about how much they want to talk about it. You know, sometimes that's driven by market forces, or it could be personal feelings, or so many reasons that you might not want to talk about what you're going through. And, you know, when you're an expat, you're away from home and you're away from family and, you know, maybe friends you've had for 20 years. So the friends you've had the last 2 or 3 years are like that. But even sometimes you can't talk to them. So, you know, I think it's fantastic that what she said, you know, She spread the word, and they both felt comfortable doing that. And all these people reached out to them and contacts, and now they've got sort of a landing parachute. I mean, like she said, it's not ideal. He's doing a fly in, fly out to Saudi, but I'm sure, you know, they're going to make it work.
Yeah, yeah. And also what she'd sort of learned about money as well, about having that security, and you know, how it had made them really think about how long they wanted to do this expat gig for, and the timing. And I think that often is a question we don't ask ourselves. I've been an expat for 17 years, 18 years maybe, and I can honestly say we've never actually said, hey, how long do we want to do this for? Because I think for us it's like, gee, I hope we can keep doing this.
And that's what we do too. We have the conversation, do we want to go home? No, we don't.
Yes.
So what will we do if we don't go home? And we're having all these conversations now, they're coming up a lot more. and you know, there's no reason we should or we shouldn't go home. It's just that it's not something we feel we want to do right now. And for people like you guys who are much more set up in terms of, you know, you've got a house, you've got a child at school in Australia, and you're about to have another one, and you know, you kind of got your long-term plan laid out a bit, whereas we're not even at that stage yet because our kids are a little bit younger. So you know that, you know, you're always going to have a base in Australia, so you know, if it all falls apart, you just fly home and just set up and do what you can, you know. So we're kind of not even there right now. Like, we sold a house in Sydney, so that we don't have a house right now. You know, we've got places we can go, you know, we wouldn't be homeless if we went back, but we wouldn't know what city we would go to or anything like that. So it's just kind of, that's all up for discussion. So if we're talking about what city would we go to Australia, why wouldn't we say what country might we go to?
You know, I know a lot of people go, oh, well, we should be doing that, and you know, cementing some roots down. But at the same stage, if you do that, there is an element of risk. And if you are banking your cash and you know, you're kind of hedging your bets, well, there's no reason why you can't come home and rent for 6 months and then get yourself all set up as well, you know, without that drama. Because I mean, our house probably isn't in the right place for Greg to get a job. It's in a great place to have a holiday house, but it's probably not in the most logical place for him to get a job. There's not a lot of oil and gas out here by the beach. So we spoke to some other people as well. I thought Rosina was really interesting. I would have loved to have got to speak to her more. She said that they've had the rug pulled out under them within a day, and that there was some extremely hair-raising time. She said the past 2 years have left her sometimes broken and bitter and wondering how to get through. And she said inner strength and patience have taken on a different meaning, as has gratitude. Everything's a learning curve and everything has hidden blessings. You just have to look for them. The biggest lesson is don't get complacent. I think that's really good, isn't it?
I was really interested in what Sasha had to say. So Sasha said, my husband gave up his job for us to move overseas with my job. The pressure I feel to succeed in my job is so much greater than it ever was at home. So that's interesting from the other point of view, because so often we talk about, you know, husbands and jobs and things. So I thought, I mean, I always like to see a leading spouse who's a female.
Yes.
And like Claire, her visa is tied to their right of residence. So, you know, if she loses her job, then, you know, they can't live where they're living anymore. So,
yeah, and that's the point. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the man or the woman. The person who has the job, if there is only one of you, because, I mean, there are a few unique cases where it's two people travel with the same company. But that's golden, I think, in the expat world and doesn't happen all that often. But, yeah, the pressure on that person all of a sudden because, yeah, it is. They are responsible for everybody's visa and everybody's housing and everybody's schooling. So, it's incredible pressure. Maybe sometimes we don't realise just how hard it is for the person involved, the weight that they have on their shoulders.
Yeah, I agree. I've got a lot of opinions and then sometimes I look at Sam and I'm like, yeah, I should maybe just quiet down now about what I'm saying.
Because you're the one that's actually going to the workplace each day. Right. Yes.
Anyway, I did another interview with Smita. Smita is of Indian descent, but she's the third generation of her family to be born in Indonesia. And about 12 years ago, she moved to New Zealand. And that's where she met her husband and had two children there. And they moved to Abu Dhabi less than 2 years ago. And so let's talk to Smita.
Well, he got this job here. So he left in November last year when my younger one was born. He was 3 months old then. So I packed up our house, our lives, and then followed him a couple of months later and got here. And before my husband's 1 year was up at his old workplace, he got made redundant, so that was a nightmare of a time for us. And then took him about 3 months to find another job. And here we are about 9 months later, redundant again.
Okay. And what rights of residency do you have? Is your visa linked to your employment contract?
The employment. Yes, it does, yeah. So if you're made redundant, you've got the notice period based on your contract, and then they cancel your visa and then it's up to you to look for something else or to leave.
So you were made redundant once. Did that make any change in how you negotiated the contract for the second job?
No, because it's take what we have offered or there are other people basically for the job. So you just take whatever you get.
And is it the same?
Or you leave.
Yeah. Is it the same industry that your husband's worked in? Did he switch industries?
Yes.
It's the same industry?
No. He's specialized. He's a chef by trade. So he's specialized in that. So there's nothing much he can do.
And how long do you have now to find something else?
Well, he's serving his notice, which is until the first week of January. And the company's been good enough to say they will not cancel his visa immediately, which means we could potentially extend another month or two, but it would also depend on finances, personally speaking, because the rent is due and, you know, life expenses and everything.
Yeah.
So he reckons we can stretch it easily until February, but I'm skeptical because I'm hating every aspect of this right now. But, at least we've got until February, so I guess.
And how do you think it's different for you than if you guys were in New Zealand?
Well, with New Zealand, because it was, you know, our home, I guess, because we met there, made a life there. It's different because that's where I can say I am now from and definitely where my children were born, you know. So it's like home, isn't it? It would be a lot more stable there with the rules as well. And, you know, you don't just get, I mean, you do get made redundant and people have been, but But like you feel kind of secure because it's your place, your government, you know, that kind of thing. Here, you're an outsider. Yeah, it doesn't matter how long you stay. It could be here 28 years, but you're still an outsider. So so for sure, it's hugely unstable. That's all I can think of, yeah.
This has happened to you twice in 2 years. So how has that impacted your overall experience, do you think, of living there?
I hate that. I hate that I cannot plan, you know, even 6 months ahead because you just don't know. It is not anybody's fault. The economy isn't that great right now. We living here, whoever lives here, they know that. But, you know, before you move, well, before we left at least, we had no clue because there was nothing on papers. There was, you know, nobody said anything about anything, you know. It wasn't well publicized. So we would have thought about our move more, I guess, you know, at that time. But how is it? No, I'm not happy. I would like to stay a few more years, you know, just to feel a little bit settled, you know, because the kids are growing. I've got to find a school and, you know, the usual life things. But I can't, I don't even know if they're going back to nursery or not right now, you know. It's just annoying.
Have you always wanted to do the expat thing or an opportunity just came up?
Yes, definitely, because we did want the overseas experience, you know, because why not? Why would you stay one place if you have the option not to? Also, it's good for his CV as well, because New Zealand, as lovely as it is a very small country, you see. It's tiny. There's not much room for growth, and it's so expensive, and you know that as well. And yeah. Aussie would have been our first option. But then we thought, let's look around first. This is a time for us to look around while the children are young. When it's time to actually settle, we'd only ever go back to Aussie if the Prime Minister will take us then. Let's see.
I thought we had to take New Zealanders. I thought that we did. Will your husband continue? He's working out his notice. Will he continue to look for other work?
Well, he is looking. It has been 6 weeks since we found out, and we've applied through friends, you know, connections and stuff, apart from online. And so he has been looking, and so have I, for him, that is.
Yes.
But there's been nothing yet because it is end of their financial year here.
Right.
So everything is, you know, and it's holiday period and whatnot, you know. So it has been really, really, really bad. Not a single call since the last 6 weeks, basically.
Okay.
We think it'll get better by January, but you never know. So he is looking, but I've given him a time limit. I've told him that first week of January, you hear nothing, start looking elsewhere, like outside, you know, overseas. UAE would be our primary option because we're here already, you know. It's easier to move towns than countries, you see. So I'm hoping something will come up, but if not, then I've told him he's got to look somewhere else.
After the first redundancy, did you change how you were living your life in Abu Dhabi? Or,
well, we started off if we're focusing on the financial aspects, like we started off you know, getting a small apartment, like just a one bed, because my baby was still co-sleeping, you know.
Yep.
Then, you know, because we didn't know if we'd like it or whatever, you know. But then before we even made any plans, the redundancy happened. And then I was like, okay, we're definitely not spending more on anything because, you know, you've got to save and everything.
Yeah.
One income. And, you know, and now it's happened again. And now I'm like, I'm just furious right now.
And that impacts on your relationship with your husband, right? Like, even though it's not his fault at all.
No, it's not his fault at all. But, yeah, I mean, the stress. We barely meet. Like, his hours are already so bad anyway. It's the industry, you know, and the long working hours here are just insane. It's like on average it's 14 hour working day. Yeah, you get one day off a week on a weekday. It's usually, and these horrible long hours, and you're just like a single mom, really.
So I think the difference between Samita and Claire, although they both live in Abu Dhabi, is that when she first arrived, she considered that they didn't know if they were going to like it, so they just got a one-bedroom apartment, and they considered sort of the financial thing. And then before they ever moved or changed their situation, her husband was made redundant from his first job. So, you know, within the first 12 months. So I think that's, you know, they never really got on their feet, you know, and then he found his second job and he's just been made redundant again. So I just kind of feel like it's such a difficult situation because, as she said, she's feeling so angry and upset about it, but it's not, you know, it's no one's fault, as she said. It's just that the situation in Abu Dhabi isn't that great in terms of, you know, overall employment.
Yeah, and I think she brought in the whole thing about the children as well, and the guilt about, you know, moving the children again and how you're affecting their lives and what you're doing to them. That's huge.
And I thought the one thing that she said was that was very interesting when we talked about whether she always wanted to be an expat. She said, "Why would you stay in one place if you had the option not to?" I was like, yes, she was always destined to do that.
Yep, she was always going to be an expat.
Yeah.
And the other person we had was Tracy Galvin, who said that there are very few jobs that are secure and long-term, but the most stressful thing about being an expat is when your legal right to stay in a country is tied up with the job. And that's it, right? It's everybody's visa and everything, that whole thing that you've got to make a quick exit. So many people said, you know, our job finished on the Friday and we had until the following Thursday to get out of the country because you're suddenly illegal. Tracy said her husband was made redundant this time last year. Their visas were cancelled with immediate effect, which gave them 28 days to leave the country, and that they were lucky enough to be able to meet the conditions for a 10-year residence pass so that they could stay on where they were. But she just said how incredibly stressful that is. And, you know, I think it was touched on with Claire as well with the whole thing of do we call the packers, what do we tell the packers, when do we book the packers? Do you know, because you want to get the quote, you want to get organised, but you're also desperately hanging on to see if you can score another job quickly, like really, really quickly.
And that's like Smita was saying with her husband, like he thinks they can last till February, but she's told him he's only got till this time. And then she's making the decisions, you know, because her background's in finance and banking. He's a chef. So she's like, I've decided, right, this is how long I can wait. But, you know,
she wants to have some control, you know, because you are so out of control? Is it that you just think, oh, no, I'm going to get some control here. I'm going to set some dates. I'm going to have some power.
Well, it's the only control you can kind of feel. I mean, she's working full time. She's working full time in her children's nursery doing payroll and HR. Mm-hmm. But her background is in banking. But she's very much doing kind of the second income job. But they couldn't stay there just based on her job because she's working off his visa. So he had to write her a letter of authorization to say that she could work and then she can. So once his visa is cancelled, she doesn't have her job anymore either. So it's all, she doesn't really have any control over the situation. So it's just very difficult.
Yeah. Okay. Well, shall we crack on with our social media?
On a lighter note.
on a much lighter note. So what have you been listening to, Nikki Moffat?
Well, I have been listening to so many things because apparently I've given up reading forever, but I have been listening to The Berlin Patient, which was recommended by Lee Sales on one of her chats, 10 Looks 3. And where are they? They're over 3 weeks. They're overdue for the next podcast. It's killing me. The Berlin Patient, it's voice messages that a guy sent to his girlfriend who broke up with him when they were on a trip to Berlin.
Oh, yes, I heard about this and that they're miserable and embarrassing and awkward to listen to.
It's excruciating. Like, to listen to it is just like it's skin crawling. You know, I don't know whenever you first saw The English Office, you know, like in the very beginning. I feel so uncomfortable. I can't always look at the television. You know, it's just that kind of feeling. And anyway, he's a comedian and he plays the same tapes over and over and has a group of different friends that listen to it and give him a response on it, and including his mom and a psychologist and, you know, all these kind of things. And I just don't know if I like it or not, but I keep listening to it.
So he actually wrote these letters. It's not make-believe. It's a real-life situation.
No, he didn't write them. They're voice messages.
Oh, my gosh.
He just recorded a whole lot of voice. It's like one big, long voicemail. There's 90 minutes of voice messages that he sends, you know. And it's funny because it's excruciating and difficult and embarrassing to listen to, but it's also – like, he's like, I didn't feel that way at all. You know, like, he's got this really small voice about, oh, I really missed you today. And I got a pizza from the shop with, you know, where it was five euro for the pizza. And he's like, what was I thinking? You know, like, but it's just like, just, and it's 'cause compelling, but not like you're listening, but you're cringing, and it's awful. But anyway, that's one of my podcasts. I'm still listening to Offshore, which I mentioned last time, and I found out it's a 10-parter, and I'm on part 9.
Right.
So it's nearly over, but luckily they're going to have a new series, and I've really, really enjoyed it. I would recommend it.
Yeah.
And back to one of my old faves, Startup.
Oh, I love Startup.
I loved the first season of Startup the best because it was about them making Gimlet, you know, their company that does all these podcasts.
Yeah.
And the first 3 episodes of the new season were about Gimlet, and I just love them.
Fantastic. So for those who don't know, Startup was about a guy who had an idea to start like a media organization for podcasts. So he was going to and it's sort of, I think episode 1 of Startup is it episode 1 where he's doing the pitch to the guy?
Pitches.
Yeah. It's superb. So if you haven't got onto it, definitely get onto it.
And what about you? What have you been listening to?
Me, and I just have some happy news for you because you were saying about Lee Sales and Chats 10 Looks 3. Yes. They dropped an episode today, so you'll be able to go and have a listen. I haven't listened to it yet, but I did see it pop up in my feed and thought, yes, I know.
I keep refreshing and it's not coming.
So I have been listening to a podcast called Not By Accident, and I have absolutely devoured this podcast. And it's one of those ones where you discover and then you think, oh my God, this is fantastic because there's, you know, 15 episodes here for me to have right now. Do you know? So it's written and produced by Sophie Harper, and it's just so unique and brilliant in how it's done, and you discover why as you go along. So Sophie was in Denmark working for the European Film College. And when she lived in Australia previously to that, she'd done a Bachelor of Arts and majored in film studies. So she's got some really good background on how to put a documentary together and how to tell a story, right? So yep. Sophie was 38 and in Denmark when she decided that she wanted to have a baby. She didn't have a partner. She kind of gives you the background that she had a few relationships, but nothing that had cemented, you know, into the baby making phase. You kind of find out in about episode 3, I reckon it is, that she's also gay, which, you know, adds sort of another layer to the story of what that means for her and trying to have babies. Because I, like, she was talking about the actual process of IVF and willingly having someone put sperm in you. And I hadn't thought about that, that if you're a gay woman, there's not a lot of sperm coming your way, do you know? Pardon the pun. but she just is fabulous. So it sort of starts basically for the last 5 years she's been using her audio recorder like a camera or a sketchbook. And she's done hundreds of hours of recording. So you hear her going to the insemination clinic. I reckon episode 1, because it feels like a million years ago now, because I've just, you know, done hours of this now. But episode 1 has her doing the ovulation kit and then deciding that she will go into the insemination place. You realise she's in Denmark and that's how she can do it. She's picked a donor. It runs through why she sort of made the decision she did with the donor and how the insemination people, the IVF people, are feeling incredibly confident because they can sort of see that the egg's just dangling there waiting, you know, to head off. I know, it's fascinating. And then it goes through her getting pregnant and sort of breaking the news to people and what it means for her job and what it means for her feeling of being an expat and wanting to be with family. And then you see all the little lumps and bumps that go along the way with her parents and her family and what it means for them. And, you know, it's just really brilliant storytelling. The interesting thing, you know, you were saying about the guy with the voice, how he's got this little voice. She doesn't have an expressive voice at all. It's very, she kind of talks really quietly like this. I can't even describe how it is. And so that took me a little while to get used to at the beginning, but I did absolutely fall in love. And it always starts with this little voice saying, "Hello, I'm Astrid," and which is the little girl that she had.
Yeah.
And it's really cute. So that's what I've been listening to, and it's brilliant, and I would strongly recommend it. And it also tells a good story of how the podcast kind of took off, because the podcast is in the top 10 on iTunes, and she has had a lot of exposure, and she's now sponsored. So it's interesting in that way. There's lots and lots of layers of the story.
So it's about expat, it's about podcast, it's about having a baby, it hits all the
notes. It does, it does. It's great. Now tell me, what have you been watching?
We're watching. So I'm still watching The West Wing, and I'm still pushing for Donald Trump. He should be watching it too. We should be watching it together, because he's very impacted by television apparently, so I think he should be watching it. I love it. I'm up to the last season because I've totally been binging every night.
I need to
other thing is an Instagram account that I've been following, and I saw a video on Facebook, and you must have seen it in your feed at some time, called Drawings for My Grandchildren.
Yes. How brilliant was that? That was great.
So brilliant.
Yes.
And it's a great video on Facebook that explains how this Instagram account came to be. And the Instagram account is fantastic, and I would totally follow it if I was you, other people. Listening.
So the story was the guy was trying to find ways for his grandfather to connect with his children. Right. Was it? No. With the grandchildren.
Yeah. Because they all lived in different countries. So his grandchildren live in two different countries to each other, and that's different to the country he lives in. So it's about, it was about doing all the connections, and it talks about explaining to his father what Instagram was and explaining, you know, how he could use it. And then it talks about how it evolved, how he didn't like it in the beginning, and then he got into it. And it's just, the video is very, very clever. And the Instagram account's very fun.
And the father does drawings, doesn't he? And that's how he connects.
Yes, so it's not photos, yes. And it's drawings of his grandchildren or things he's done with them or things that he sees.
That's brilliant. Yes,
and there's a little story with everyone.
Yeah, oh, that's gorgeous. Yeah, no, that's a good one. We'll have the link for that one.
Have you been watching?
Oh, my gosh. I have been watching, and I'm going to do it the minute that you and I get off this podcast.
After you edit the podcast.
Yeah, of course. That might happen tomorrow. I have been watching the latest season of Cold Feet. Now, did you watch Cold Feet the first time
around? I did love Cold Feet, yes.
Oh, do you know, Cold Feet is one of the, you know, we all have those series that really mean something to us, and we can know where we were and we know which episode and whatever. So Cold Feet was really, I just absolutely adored it, and it was one of those series that back in the old expat days, I reckon we got it when we were in, we certainly played it for friends in Libya, so we may have got it when we were in Malaysia, but early 2000s, and British series based in Manchester, three couples and just beautiful relationships between them, and it went for five series, and there's a particular episode that is the most gut-wrenching moment of TV, I think, for many, many people. And
bit like A Country Practice when Molly died.
Yes. And I just loved James Nesbitt in this series. I really fell in love with him. I'm sure most of the world did. But also what I hadn't realised as a backstory is it was also huge for Manchester in that it suddenly gave the city of Manchester this big boost that they talk about it as a really influential time for Manchester as a city, which I didn't realise, is that it kind of, they see it as cold feet really put them on the map. So now we come back, I guess it's now what, 14 years later?
There's a new series?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and they keep saying, for, you know, it's been 14 years since I saw him, or 14 years since this. So I gather that's how long it's been since they finished. So they're all back. They're all close to 50. And the James Nesbitt character is getting married. And he comes back to Manchester, and it's beautiful. Like, episode one is really tricky. It kind of, you think, oh no, it's not the same. It's just not the same. But they really do find their way. And by episode two, you're kind of falling in love with them again for the same reasons you love them the first time round. And the characters have gone back to those beautiful things about them. It's very, very clever how they've done it, and I just am loving it. And I polished off 4 episodes last night.
And where would you be watching this?
On iTunes. First episode, you go, oh no, this is a bit too try hard. It's not quite right. And you can kind of see they haven't found their way with each other. It's all a bit too, like, they've got to introduce all the characters of their children, of course, because yes, all those little children are now teenagers.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And so it kind of doesn't work, I don't think, in that first episode. But then they find their way, and it does. I thought it was brilliant. Really, really loved it.
So, are you reading? Feet.
I am still reading The Disobedient Wife. And I don't want this to be any reflection on the actual book, because the book is brilliant.
We love the book. We're enjoying it. We're just...
Yes.
A reading time is sometimes... Yes. Disappeared.
Well, I seem to be in the car a lot. I'm on the in the car a lot.
Imagine if it was on Audible and you could listen.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about some reviews we've had on iTunes.
Some reviews, yay!
Yay! So the two expat cooks gave us a great review. Absolutely love, love, love this podcast. It's created such a great community of women from all over the globe. I love listening to the interesting stories of others and as they navigate expat life. So I wanted to say thank you to Expat Cooks. Have you been to the two Expat Cooks Facebook page and blog page?
No, but I will go now and I will like them because they like us.
We also had Mel in Bris Vegas who said, it's an absolute gem of a podcast. I've been tuning into this brilliant podcast from day one. Mel, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then we had Great by Swarm, is it, in the UK. Love this, very down to earth and familiar issues to expats and otherwise. So thank you, everybody, for that because, as we said, we can't kind of climb anywhere on the charts without those reviews. And we love it if you leave them because it just makes
and
it
see,
so much easier.
You can see different reviews than I can see. So I can see another review from someone called Teresa Cooks.
Oh, tell me.
Who says, I love these ladies. It's interesting and it feels like you're having tea with friends.
Oh, nice. That's what we want. We want people to be having a chat. Yep.
Yes. We also had a voice message from the lovely Monica in LA, which I forgot to mention last time. So thank you to the lovely Monica.
And what did Monica in LA say?
Monica in LA said, oh my God, I just found this podcast and now I have to listen to the last two seasons to catch up.
And I don't think we've explained that for a while, that we do have that microphone button on the website. So if you want to leave us a message, we can actually hear you. If you go to the website and you push on the microphone button that's on the website, you can send us a message. If you have read The Disobedient Wife, we would love it if you just left us a message to let us know what you thought of the book. If you have any questions for the author, that would also be great.
And we also love Nancy Moore, who left us a voice message to tell us that she tried to leave us an iTunes rating, but she couldn't because she did one last year.
Thank you, Nancy.
And a shout out just quickly to my brother, who I spoke to this week.
What's your brother's name?
My brother's name is Tim.
Oh.
And at the moment he's living in Roma in Queensland. And he said, when's the next podcast? And I said, why? Do you listen to it? He said, I never miss one. And I said, oh, what do you think? He said, not really my cup of tea. But you never miss one. No, he said, I like the format. I like to hear what you're up to. I like to hear what you're doing. I like the interviews. I was like, okay, good to know. I'll drop you a line.
Good brother. See, that's the sort of brother that as a mother, I have to say, you want to, I love the idea that one of my boys will ring one of my girls in 20 years and say, hey, I listened to your podcast. You know, and that's so nice. That is so nice.
I never miss one. Not really my cup of tea.
Yeah, anyway. Don't like it. Think it's crap. But I'll keep listening because you're my sister.
I think that's a wrap.
That is a wrap. So, guys, we'll talk next week about The Disobedient Wife, and we'll give you some summer reading ideas because we've got some, and we'll catch up then.
You might. I'm in winter.
Okay.